Welcome to the Sufi Reverberations podcast, where each week, God willing, you will be able to hear a poem, a story, a meditation, and a musical interlude that give expression to one Sufi's perspective concerning the mystical dimension of Islam. My name is Anab Whitehouse, and I will be your host. Although I am not a sheikh, nonetheless, I did have the opportunity to spend 16 years in the company of a Sufi saint of the 20th century, and by the grace of God, was able to gain a few insights into the nature of the Sufi mystical path through that association. So, without further delay, let's proceed to the essential contents of this episode. The following selection of floetry is entitled Sovereignty. Storm clouds have gathered on the horizon. The way of power eclipses the sun. Darkness has spread across the heartland, chasing down every able-bodied man. "You don't have to do this," he said, a thought that seeped deeply into me and then sought a home in my soul, away from the war that had advanced to democracy's door. Who am I and to whom is loyalty owed? A fierce struggle takes place within me. In the case of the state, we, yours truly, am I property, or should I be free? The rule of law is placed before the courts with a running commentary that sorts through the precedents that allegedly tie duty to the birth of liberty. Soul sings its song of freedom through truth. Thus the sought for standard of reason proof needs a demonstration, which carries one beyond reasonable doubt to be one. Constitution and ratification are mentioned as forming the convention through which obligation enters our lives and the means through which society thrives. We the people have issued the decree, we are told, but when one attempts to see how things were done, illegalities find vision. There is no integrity. Even if rules weren't fashioned corruptly, I question the strength of that which ties me, supposedly, to the ideas of those who lived centuries before I arose. Whose interpretation of life should we pursue? The way of the majority? Does anyone have the authority to deny principles of sovereignty? All human beings have priority over the nations that have come to be arbiters of many facets of life, and whose judgments lead nowhere but to strife. We do have duties of care to others, since we are all like sisters and brothers in life's family. But this comes from two natural laws that offer us a clue. Ignorance is not an end but a start. We need to find the way back to our heart. Character is the steed that will carry us through the shadows of uncertainty. We have ceded our agency away, the capacity to do and to say that which is proper and necessary, to distance ourselves from pathology. We have enabled ways of power to leverage our lives to serve what they do, to let loose the dogs of psychopathy that hunt and destroy the economy. We have allowed ourselves to be oppressed by national interests that suppress truth and decency while making empty promises concerning democracy. The cult has taken control of our soul and dammed the spring from which sovereignty flows. Healing circles are needed to restore what is essential to both rich and poor. This week's short story is titled Asymmetry. Owen was devoted to his spiritual guide, and this had been so for years. He would hang around the center looking for anything he could find which needed to be done, and with which his teacher might be pleased. Nearness to his teacher made Owen very content. Even if Owen were not in direct contact with his guide, just being in the same building as his teacher, or going on some errand for his guide, generated a sense of happiness within Owen, and seemed to sustain him while he performed this or that task. Like most people, Owen had his shortcomings.
However, Owen was aware of many of them and was constantly struggling to become more spiritually mature. One issue that did bother Owen, and he was not really sure whether the issue touched on a problem within him or was a problem in certain other people, is that Owen became upset when he saw anything which he felt was disrespectful towards or inconsiderate of his teacher. As far as Owen was concerned, a spiritual guide is sort of like a philosopher's stone that, through the grace of God, serves as a catalytic agent or surface which greatly enhances and facilitates the process of spiritual transformation within a seeker. Owen felt that when an individual was disrespectful to her or his spiritual guide, such an individual was committing two errors. First, Owen believed, treating the friends of God in a disrespectful way was just plain wrong. In fact, according to Owen, such actions ultimately displayed disrespect for the one who had assigned the divine friend to help creation. Secondly, Owen was of the opinion that people who were inconsiderate of or disrespectful towards or failed to show an appropriate spiritual etiquette with respect to their teacher was really putting spiritual obstacles in their own way. Indeed, they were distancing themselves from the very means, the secondary causes, to which God, the primary cause, brought about spiritual transformation. Owen believed that just as divinity used certain chemical or physical substances as catalytic agents to induce material reactions which served divine purposes, so too he believed God used certain human beings, the prophets, saints, and spiritual guides, as catalytic agents to help induce spiritual reactions that serve divine purposes. As above, so below. The purpose and cause were the same, but in the material and spiritual worlds, divine intention was given expression through laws of a physical or spiritual nature that were manifested through an appropriate media or means. Physical media in the case of chemical catalysis, and human media in the case of spiritual catalysis. Consequently, from the perspective through which Owen approached life, if a person was disrespectful to his or her spiritual teacher, this was like cutting off one's nose despite one's face. Owen felt a spiritual counterpart to Newton's first law of physics, which says that for every action there is an equal and opposite reaction, came into play, and therefore people only brought spiritual difficulty onto themselves via their own thoughtlessness concerning the spiritual guide, not because the teacher wanted this to happen. It was just the way things tended to work. At least Owen believed this to be true. There had been several relevant incidents last week, in particular, which Owen had witnessed that had upset him. For example, in one case, a man who was affiliated with the spiritual center had been talking to some newcomers, and rather than let these people meet with and talk with or listen to the spiritual guide directly, the fellow had taken it upon himself to speak on behalf of the teacher, and in the process had created some confusion and misunderstandings. Eventually, when the newcomers met with the spiritual guide, these confusions and problems got sorted out, but a considerable amount of difficulty had arisen as a result of what the person had done. Although Owen was willing to concede the counterfeit teacher probably had the best of intentions and was just trying to be helpful, but got carried away by his ill-considered, enthusiastic impatience, nonetheless, Owen had taken the man aside and let him know that what he was doing, however well-intended, was being very disrespectful to the spiritual guide. Not only was the man trying to usurp a spiritual function which did not belong to him, but he was creating difficulties for his spiritual teacher. Then there had been that whole speaking engagement mess. Someone had called the center and wanted the spiritual guide to address an assembly of some kind about mysticism. The teacher had been otherwise occupied at the time and couldn't take the call. Defying all common sense, rather than taking a message and passing it on to the teacher for his disposition, the woman who had been doing phone duty at the time took it upon herself to say the teacher would be happy to speak with the group, and she did a first-rate job of taking down all the details involving place, date, and time, only to discover subsequently that the teacher was already booked at that time and date. Unfortunately, by the time the teacher had come to know about the double booking, the second group had begun to advertise the teacher's appearance. Owen didn't know exactly how his teacher had resolved the fiasco, but somehow, in his own amazing way, his guide had once again, by the grace of God, been able to find a way to accommodate everyone without anyone being inconvenienced or embarrassed. In the meantime, Owen had tried to help the woman at the heart of the mess to understand that this simply wasn't the way to do things, and it showed a great deal of disrespect for the teacher. Owen had tried to maintain equanimity during the exchange with the woman. However, he wasn't entirely successful, although he had behaved quite a lot better than he frequently did under similar circumstances, which Owen supposed indicated some degree of spiritual improvement. On occasion, the thought crossed Owen's mind that perhaps he should not be trying to inform these people about their mistakes, even if he did so quietly and unobtrusively. On the other hand, the spiritual quality of his teacher was such that the man often did not chastise people directly for their misdeeds, although there had been a few exceptions in this general principle, which Owen had come to know about over the years. His teacher preferred other, more indirect, subtle methods. Owen believed educators referred to this approach as waiting for teachable moments to arise, and then taking advantage of such moments when they occurred. Owen remembered one occasion of this sort very well, for he had been at its fulcrum point. Owen had not been with the spiritual center very long when his teacher, who even then had been elderly and periodically suffering from bouts of ill health, had asked someone to request Owen to do something. The chore was relatively simple. Owen was to take something to one of the caretakers of a spiritual shrine on top of the hill that rose up behind the center. The hill was not large, but it was not small either. Making the hike from the bottom to the top took about an hour. And in some places, even though there was a cut trail all the way, the angle of incline was fairly steep. Whether it was laziness or feeling hurt, he had not been asked directly by his teacher or something else, Owen was not quite certain, but the bottom line was that Owen put off doing the task. 2 or 3 hours later, when his assigned task still had not been completed, his teacher, frail health and all, walked to the top of the hill in the heat of the afternoon, and it had been one of the hottest days of the summer, and delivered the desired object to the caretaker of the shrine. His teacher had never mentioned the incident to Owen. In fact, he treated Owen with even more love and compassion after the incident than Owen believed to be the case prior to the incident. Yet Owen had gotten the message loud and clear. Owen had cried about the occasion many times since and still deeply regretted the disrespect and inconsiderateness which he had displayed on that day. He had been trying to repent for his mistake ever since. Owen supposed his own mistake might form a substantial part of why he took it upon himself to speak with people and try to warn them about the importance of showing consideration and respect for the teacher under all circumstances. Consequently, although he did sometimes wonder if he was being presumptuous in talking with certain people when such things came to his attention, he also felt that as long as he kept things quiet and didn't try to embarrass these individuals in front of others, then maybe it was okay. Besides, he was sure if there was a problem surrounding what he on occasion was doing in this respect, then sooner or later his teacher would say something to him about the matter. One day, Owen was helping out in the kitchen. There was going to be a celebration at the center later that evening, and quite a few people were expected to attend, and as a result, a lot of preparation was required since a banquet was on the menu. Practically everyone at the center was helping out in one way or another. Owen had pulled kitchen duty, and he was just about to go to the market to pick up some supplies when one of the members of the center indicated that before he went, the spiritual guide had wanted Owen to speak with the teacher in order to make certain everything that was needed from the market would be obtained. Owen went upstairs to his teacher's office, knocked on the door, and heard the words, "Come in." His teacher greeted Owen warmly. "Please, Owen, take a seat," he requested. When Owen sat down, he inquired, "How are the preparations coming along?" Owen replied, "Quite well, I think. We still have a ways to go, but I feel everything will be ready in time." His teacher said, "Wonderful," and added, "I understand you are on the way to the market to gather some last-minute items." "That's right," Owen remarked. "Good, good," he responded. The teacher seemed to be preoccupied about something or other, and Owen waited for him to say whatever he was thinking about. The teacher said, "When you go to the market today, I want you to take special care to treat everyone you meet with lots of empathy and compassion. I know, Owen, you understand that whenever any one of the people affiliated with the center go out into the community, that they reflect to varying degrees something about our center's spiritual teachings and principles. In a sense, everyone who goes into the community is like an emissary of sorts for the center, and we should always try to be on our best behavior in order to avoid whatever problems and unpleasantness we can. However, there is also another reason for doing this. More specifically, everyone, whatever they may or may not believe about God, is part of God's creation. In that sense, all of creation is sacred and deserves to be treated with as much respect as, God willing, one's spiritual capacity permits. Now, I find no fault with the way you have been conducting yourself whenever you have gone into the community. Indeed, on such outings, you always have represented the center very well. But I also know that sometimes this is a struggle for you. So what I wanted you to do is give you a way of looking at things which may make such interactions easier for you. I know you love me very much, Owen. You have tremendous respect for me because, among other things, you feel, as you once explained to me, that you consider a mystical guide as sort of a spiritual version of the Philosopher's Stone, and that through association with me you feel you absorb, by God's grace, certain qualities which are helpful to you in your spiritual quest, and there is some truth in how you feel about this matter. But what I would like you to do, Owen, is to treat everybody as if they are your spiritual guide, for in a sense they are. God teaches us through all the events of our lives, including the people with whom we meet, and not just through those events revolving around one spiritual teacher. I want you to show the same respect to everyone else that you very obviously show to me. A spiritual teacher may, by the grace of God, have a special function to perform, and in fact does have a role that no one else can duplicate and for which others cannot serve as a substitute. But this special function does not entitle the teacher to special treatment. If I am deserving of respect, then really all are deserving of respect. Everyone should be treated with the same consideration and willingness to help them out as best one's circumstances permit. If people at the center treat me better than they treat other people merely because of my special function, then perhaps I have not properly communicated a very important principle of our spiritual way. To the best of our ability, we should treat everyone both inside and outside the center as sacred expressions of God's creation. The teacher smiled a very big, loving smile. "Well, I shouldn't delay you any further, Owen. I know you have a number of errands to run. I do appreciate all your efforts on our behalf, but do try to keep in mind what I've said just now." Owen thanked his teacher and left. Walking down the stairs, Owen realized that while on the surface his teacher had been talking primarily about Owen's trip to the market, nevertheless, in fact, his guide was actually talking about the events of recent weeks. His spiritual teacher had, in fact, gotten around to talking to him about what had been transpiring over the last several weeks, but in the teacher's own inimitable manner. Today's musical interlude is called Natural Wonders.
From high atop the north face of Mount Everest amidst the mysterious and majestic Himalayan mountain range, you are listening to the Sufi Reverberations podcast.
Bismillah is the title of today's meditative essay. Practitioners of the Sufi path preface what they intend to do with the term Bismillah. This means in the name of God. Actually, from the Sufi perspective, the more precise rendering of the meaning of Bismillah is in the name of Allah. Allah, which translated literally is the God, is believed by the Sufi masters to be the all-inclusive name of God. All-inclusiveness, in this case, is a very specific meaning for the Sufi masters. It refers to the way in which the various names and attributes of God are, in a sense, so many different kinds of principles of divinity manifested through the prism of the reality of God's primary name, that is, Allah. God signs divine manifestations with many different kinds of ink and signatures, according to the names and attributes which underwrite such manifestations. However, the one writing the checks is always the same, the one who is invoked through the name of Allah, irrespective of the particular inks and signatures being used in any given set of circumstances. All of the activities, manifestations, and signatures come by authority of and under the umbrella of the all-inclusive name of Allah. By way of a very rough illustrative example, to help provide a framework of sorts for the foregoing, consider the following. In the material world, we each have different roles to play and serve a variety of functions. We are mothers and fathers, we are daughters and sons or sisters and brothers. We are neighbors or acquaintances, we are workers and or students. We are wives or husbands, we play musical instruments and or we are sports enthusiasts. We are collectors and consumers, we are citizens and foreigners. We are moviegoers and or we are theatergoers. There are many different kinds of activities and interests in which we are engaged. We have a variety of talents and capabilities. Nonetheless, everything we can do can be considered to be done under the authority of and in the name of the one who is known as Mary Smith or David Jones and so on. As such, our names have a public and legal standing. Our names give expression to the reality which stands behind that name. Moreover, the mere mention of our names has the capacity to induce smiles, anger, sorrow, pride, ambivalence, anxiety, love, and a host of other thoughts, emotions, and actions. In a sense, names come to have a reality of their own, although we realize the capacity of the name to elicit responses is because of the context of relationships, experiences, and interactions in which the bearer of that name is involved. Sometimes we have nicknames. Sometimes we have aliases or AKAs, also known as. Sometimes we undergo legal name changes. Sometimes people refer to us in formal or informal ways. Sometimes people call out to us through endearments or in intimate ways. In all these cases, the reality being referred to is the same. The differences in name or attribute being invoked are entirely a matter of the functional dimension or relationship being addressed. Somewhat analogously, to say Bismillah is to proceed with the following understanding. One is calling on God in an all-inclusive manner involving all the countless ways in which God relates to a human being. Human beings are linked to God's essence through the capacities, powers, and principles that are the realities or meanings to which different names and attributes of God give expression. God is our creator. God is the one who nurtures us. God is our protector and strength. God is the provider of our sustenance, both physically and spiritually. God is the comforter. God is the friend. God is the endlessly rich one. God is the one to whom we repent. God is the one who forgives. God is the one who nurtures us. God is the generous one. God is the one who arranges and harmonizes everything in an ordered fashion. God is the source of justice. God is the hearer and seer of all things. God is the giver and taker of life. God is the one who bestows blessings independently of our deserving such gifts. God is the one who embraces us with affection and love. God is the one who guides us and the one who can permit us to be led into error. God is the one who raises us up in honor as well as the one who lowers us in humiliation. God is the one who is powerful as well as gentle. God is the one who is infinitely subtle. God is the one who is both manifest as well as hidden. God is the one who destroys, and God is the one who heals. God is the one who is endlessly compassionate and merciful. God is the one who is transcendent and beyond any likeness of which we can conceive. God is independent of us, and yet God is constantly solicitous of our welfare and well-being. God is our judge. God is our trustee. God is the source of all forms of light. The number of ways in which God relates to us is infinite. The names and attributes through which we call upon God and which give expression to the realities of God's various modalities of relating to human beings are similarly infinite. To invoke Bismillah involves more than the understanding one is addressing God and asking God to bless whatever follows. For the practitioners of the Sufi path, the above invocation is the realization, the depth of which varies with the individual, that everything which occurs is a manifestation of one or more of the modalities of relationship linking God and human beings. There is nothing taking place within us or outside of us which does not give expression to the realities encompassed by the one to whom the all-inclusive name of Allah makes identifying reference. Furthermore, the invocation of Bismillah is undertaken with the intention, the sincerity of which varies with the individual, that everything we do should be done for the sake of the one through whom everything is possible. In other words, to intend to act in the name of God means the following. Whatever we intend to do should reflect the will of the one in whose name we are purporting to serve, remember, and praise through our intended actions. You have been listening to the Sufi Reverberations podcast. I hope you will join me next week for a new episode of this program. May peace be your companion.